Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics, from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
Earners, it's 2021, the year of execution. In order to execute, we have to have information. And the number one place to get the information, EYL University. Shadi, tell them what we're bringing.
Yes, EYL University has been reloaded. We already have 100 past webinars. We already have weekly webinars. We already have our private investment group on Facebook. We already have monthly financial planning calls. We already have bi-weekly real estate calls. But what has been added to EYL University this year is access to MG, the Mortgage Guy's Home Buyer's Blueprint, which walks you through the home buying process from A to Z. And what also has been added, breaking news alert. Everybody always asks to be in our group chat.
How do I get in there?
And when we talk about all the investment plays that we are making, we are going to have investment calls, group chat calls with me, Troy, and the whole team, and walk you through our plays that we're making and give you insight into our portfolios. All of that for 75% off. That's right. We are doing a blowout sale, 75% off for a limited time only. Go to EYLUniversity.com right now and sign up.
See you on the other side.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
So we're going to jump right into it, right? So we get a lot of feedback on Instagram recently about leasing cars, buying cars, right? Now, you have a wealth of information being in the car industry for how long? Over 10 years, right?
Well, 20 years now. This year, actually, be 20 years in the car industry, from the bank to the dealership side.
So. Yeah, you've worked every facet.
Basically, yeah.
Every facet. So, all right. So we're going to get into your backstory, but before we get into the backstory, I want to just jump right into it because people take this like very personal. I know this, like, it's like a real personal thing. Like, it's like we got like 1,000 comments over a video that we posted and people were like, no, that's a terrible idea. You should never lease a car. And people were like, no, you should never buy a car. And people were arguing with each other. They're about to start fighting on Instagram. So it's like, I realize it's one of those things that's very emotional for people.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody wants to feel like they made a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you bought a car, it's like you don't want to admit that that might be a bad. You bought it, you leased a car, you might not want to say that's a bad idea. So everybody's like, you know, and on. So my personal opinion on it is that, you know, there's no right shoe that fits all feet, right?
True.
Leasing is a great option for a lot of people. Buying a car could be a great option for a lot of people. Buying a used car could be a great option for a lot of people. Thing with our podcast is we just try to provide information, right? So
yeah, and just so we know, like, we've done both.
Well, yeah,
personally, we've done both.
I'm gonna tell my story.
So, myself too.
Yeah.
So my personal journey in cars is when I graduated from college, right? That was my first time getting a car. I didn't have a car before that. So when I graduated from college, I came home and the first car that I had, I wanted a luxury car. So I brought a used Infiniti. I had a G35 Infiniti.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was only like a couple years. But it was a nice car though.
Yeah, yeah.
Cooper sedan.
Sedan. Four door. So I had a G35 and it was nice. And I had that car for about 5 years. I had a terrible interest rate because I didn't have any credit.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to figure it out as I go. So in year five, it started to like fall apart. Right? Tires, I had mm-hmm. to start buying tires and like transmission and a whole bunch of everything just started falling apart on it, right? So I'm like, I need a new car. So when I went to the now it's time to upgrade. So I went to the BMW dealership,
okay.
And I was about to get a BMW. So when I went to the dealership, I'm like, I want to buy a car. And I'm thinking like, you know, I want to buy a car. I don't want to rent a car. I want to lease a car. I want to buy mm-hmm. a car.
We heard that line.
Well, it's all Jay-Z. It's
Jay-Z's fault, right? Right? We don't lease. We buy the whole car. As you should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like we grew up thinking like, yo, you got to buy the car.
Jay-Z really tainted our brain. Shout out to Jay. Shout out to Jay. That's our guy. But he said that line. We don't lease. We buy the whole car. Like, as you should. So. Yeah. We got to buy a car. Like, that's the mentality we was having.
Yeah.
So when I went to the dealership, the guy, he was telling me, he's like, nobody buys cars. Everybody that comes here has money. Nobody's bought 90% of people here is leasing cars. So I'm like, why? And then I started to dig deep into it. And then I started to understand why mm-hmm. he said that as far as like the tax business benefits and all of the different things that come, the benefits that come with leasing. So then my last two cars, I leased a BMW. Now I'm leasing a Benz. And who knows what I'll do next. But
yeah.
I'll probably end up leasing another car.
Our stories are similar. Like around that same time, before you had a car, you was driving everybody's car.
Exactly.
Like, Shadi called you like, yo, I need your car. So he was driving cars. And I brought him with me when I got my second car. It was a BMW. And we had a crazy story there at the dealership. But I financed it and I got the payment out. They were like, I never forget.
Didn't he crash your car?
Before I got it off the lot.
Yeah,
we crashed it.
Yeah, that's
right?
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as I drove, they were like, just leave it. We'll come back another day. So I crashed it. They crashed it as soon as I got it. It was like $562 for the payment. I was like 24 years old.
I was like, man.
You were financing that car.
I was like, well, that's a lot. Yeah, I said, that's a lot. But you know what? Let's just go for it. And like you said, we was cruising. It was a nice car. And year four or five, like those BMWs, they had just changed the body. It was like 2004. They had just changed the body I got in 2006. And every time something was wrong in the car, like the sensor would go off. And sensors would go off. I was like, this is just getting annoying. Yeah. And every time you fix a sensor, it was like $360. I was like, all right, this is crazy. Finally, I paid it off. It was like 2012. And I'm like, what am I going to do with this car? Like, it was a $50,000 car. I looked at the value of it because I was driving it everywhere. The miles was crazy. They were like, we'll give you $6,000 for this thing. And I was like, what? Right? After 6 years of paying. And then, like, the parts. Like I said, the parts themselves. Like, that's one thing that I learned is, like, no matter how old the car is, the parts don't depreciate. So, right. Like, if you bought it in 1986... and you need new parts, the parts still cost the same.
Same as it did back then.
And I was like, you know what? This is it, man. And the final straw, my son was born, and I had the BMW 525. At that time, it was still coming in rear wheel. They didn't have four-wheel drive in all the cars. And I was coming up the hill of my house, and the car started rolling back. It was snow on the ground. And my son, literally the third day, like, that's you bring your kid home. And we, like, went into oncoming traffic. And I was like, this is it. I'm done. I'm never... driving this car again. I'm never buying a car again. That's the end of this story. And I literally walked him up the hill and left the car down the street. And he never got back in.
That's wild.
So we're going to go into the details of leasing versus buying. I'm going to say it from my standpoint as far as a business owner. But first, I want to give you the floor, right? All right. So can we talk about the difference between leasing and buying a car? What are some key differences in leasing a car and buying a car?
Well, on a lease, most people... you'll hear that a lot. People say, well, you don't own the car, right? But the truth is, do you want to own a vehicle that's going to lose value, right? Very rarely do cars go up in value. So that's why leasing is so prevalent. 70, 80%, like you said, of people lease the vehicles. When you're financing the vehicle, you technically own it, but the bank owns it while you're financing. So until you pay it off, the vehicle still belongs to the bank. The title's held by the bank. You're not the owner of that vehicle.
That's something that's a common misconception. You don't own the car either way. Until you finally pay it off. And then when you do pay it off, more people want to trade it in.
They want to trade it in right away.
Yeah. It's old. By the time you own it, now it's old.
Exactly. But another thing with the leasing that people don't fully understand. So like for me personally, right? The reason why I lease is that so I'm a business owner.
Yep.
Right. So I get better tax treatment for leasing a car.
Exactly.
Yeah. Whereas like with the lease, I could write off the insurance, the gas, and the lease payment. Formula percentage, we won't get too complicated in it, but sure. I can write that off on my taxes. Mm-hmm. If I owned the car, then I have to go by the depreciation.
Correct.
Because it's an own. I get less of a tax benefit for owning a car. So it's in my benefit to lease the car because it's pretty much a write off for me. And I don't have to worry about maintenance, right? So I haven't paid for oil change and I can't remember when because all lease, everything is paid for.
And warranties too.
Yes. And then I get a new car every 3 years. So now I always sell, like, if you want to, everybody's personal preference is different. You can't force your views on somebody, exactly. Right? Like, if you want to keep a car for 10 years, that's your right. You can do that. I don't want to do that. I want to get a new car. Yeah. So I know it's going to cost me a lot more money to buy a car and then buy a new car every 3 years as opposed to leasing a car and then getting a new car every 3 years. And the upfront is less.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, on a lease, you only pay, let's say, the taxes, right? When you're financing a vehicle, you pay tax on the whole price of the car. Or on a lease, you only pay tax on, let's say, the monthly payment. Depending on the state and where you're registering the car, let's say, like New York, you're only paying tax on the monthly payment.
Right. So I think that's something that people could, and as far as for me, I don't drive a lot. So 12,000 miles, I never go over 12,000 miles. I usually hit like 11, 10, 5. So It's perfect for me.
Yeah.
But you were saying even if you do go over 12,000.
Well, that's a big misconception also. Is a lot of people think that if I drive a lot of mileage, I shouldn't be leasing. You know, you hear a lot of people come in and they say, you know, I do 15, 20,000 miles a year. I shouldn't, you know, leasing is not for me. I think the contrary. It's the way I look at it is when you're leasing a vehicle, even if it's a high mileage lease, you know your true cost of ownership. Like you said, with maintenance, right? You know that you're going to have this car 3 years. You're going to put 15,000 miles a year. You'll have 45,000 miles. Most warranties are, let's say, 4-year, 50,000-mile bumper-to-bumper warranty, so you're still covered under your warranty. You see what I mean? So you'll be able to look at it and say, hey, you know what? I know exactly what I'm going to be paying every month for this car as long as I have my lease. Now, when you're financing a car and you're putting high mileage on the car, the two things that lower the value of the car quickest is the amount of mileage you put on it and the condition of the car. So let's say if the vehicle was in an accident. So if I'm leasing my car and someone in my next door neighbor is buying their vehicle and they're financing their car, mm-hmm. in 3 years, I have a lot more flexibility of what I can do. I don't have to worry about if my car was in an accident or, you know, did somebody key my car? Did a garbage truck come down the street and hit my car? Because their value has dropped now. So now you're playing this guessing game of, well, wait a minute, what is my car now worth? And you run into a situation where you finally pay off your car, you put money into the vehicle trying to fix it, yeah. and they turn around and say, hey, your car's worth $6,000. Now, the other thing that we talked about was that technology is moving so fast. So things get antiquated quick. So that's why leasing is nice, because in 3 years, you may not need a small sedan, right? Now in 3 years, your life changes. You have a family, you have kids. Now I want an SUV. My lease is up. I come out of the lease. I go into a brand new SUV if I want to.
Can't fit in that Honda Accord anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now it's true. Technology changes. Even like the vehicle I have now, like I saw the 2020 model. I'm like, wait,
yeah.
that is ridiculous. Like I need that technology now. Okay. So it's like you can just come in every 3 years, man. That's a huge benefit in leasing. One of the things that is important when you're leasing or financing is the credit.
Yep.
How does that work? Is there a specific bureau that car dealerships use or the bank? How's
so,
it go?
So it varies between manufacturers. So different banks. So let's say if you're going to Honda Financial, Toyota has Toyota Motor Credit, Mercedes-Benz has Mercedes-Benz Financial. They all have different criteria, right? So it's not a blanket as far as what they use. Some people use TransUnion. Some people use Equifax. Other manufacturers use what's called an auto score. So an auto score means your automotive history. So even if you had some trouble on your credit, but they saw, let's say for whatever reason, you had some medical bills or something happened, but you always paid your car note on time, mm-hmm. the bank may look at that and say, hey, well, wait a minute. Yeah, they missed some payments over here, but they always paid their car on time. So that means that, hey, you know what? This person needs that car. They need to get to work. They need to provide for their family. So no matter what happens, they're going to take care of that monthly payment.
And another thing I want people to think too, a lot of times people look at it like, okay, well, I'm not a business owner. And we're talking about luxury cars just because mm-hmm. we have luxury mm-hmm. cars, but it's the conversation is for any type of car.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, 100%.
But also people have to realize is that you don't have to be a full-time entrepreneur to be an entrepreneur. Because the tax system, I can't stress this enough, the tax system is set up for entrepreneurs and investors. It's not set up for employees, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. So as an entrepreneur, you get all kinds of benefits. You can write off meals. You can write off travel. Mm-hmm. You can write off almost anything, realistically, as long as it makes sense. Don't get sure, audited. Yeah, but, and cars is one of the things that you can write off, right?
True,
so
yeah.
if you're working a regular job and you might have a side hustle, why not get that incorporated, get an LLC, yep. get a C corp, whatever you want to do, and get a tax ID, open a bank account. Now you have a business.
Yep.
So now you can lease that from your side hustle business and you can deduct the same deductions like if you worked a regular job, right? Like now that goes against any money that you make on that end. So I say that to say you have to think like business people mm-hmm. and you don't even have to actually be a full-time business owner, salespeople as well,
yep.
right? If you're a 1099, or if you are in some form of sales where you can take deductions like real estate, stuff yep. like that, insurance, you sell insurance, the same thing. So a lot of times people, you know, they have negative views towards things because they have a lack of understanding. But once you have a lack of understanding, and like I said, now if you still choose to do that, then it's your decision. It's mm-hmm. a free country.
100%.
But a lot of times we make decisions based out of ignorance, not
yep.
knowledge,
yep.
right?
Misinformed, so, yeah.
Exactly. So one of the things I wanted to ask you was, you said MSRP versus price, right? What's the difference?
What's the selling price?
All right. So yeah, so you have MSRP, right?
Yeah.
That's what's on the window sticker, right? So the manufacturer suggests the retail price of the vehicle. That's MSRP. Manufacturer suggests the retail price. That's what they recommend you should be selling that car for.
Okay.
Now, the selling price is what you negotiate, right? Or whatever. However, you can reduce the selling price of the vehicle. That's what that comes down to.
And so is that the same thing as the cap cost?
So no, cap cost, let's say you're leasing or you're financing the vehicle. The final cap cost is the selling price plus anything else. So whatever money the bank is lending you,
okay.
whether it's a lease or a finance, they're still lending a certain amount of money. So let's say on a lease, if you rolled your taxes into your payment, that's going to add to your cap cost. If you negotiated a $50,000 selling price And then you rolled your taxes of $2,000 into the lease. That's $52,000 cap cost.
Okay. And is that negotiable?
Well, it's based on what you negotiate as far as, let's say, your selling price.
Okay.
So that whatever fees you put into it, those aren't negotiable. Those, let's say, taxes and DMV fees, things like that.
So, all right. We talked about, okay, talk about leasing a car, but buying a car. Somebody wants to buy a car, right? Mm-hmm. And you were saying most of the time, if you do want to buy a car, it makes more sense to buy a used car.
I always recommend people, if you are going to buy a car, buy a certified pre-owned. Now, listen, there's vehicles you can find at these lots that are not authorized, let's say Mercedes-Benz dealerships or Toyota dealership. Me personally, I think you're better off going to, you may pay a couple of dollars more, but you're getting it from the manufacturer. So you have the backing of the manufacturer. So just give you an idea. Most companies, when they certify a vehicle, the vehicle goes through, let's say, you know, 150 point, 160 point inspection. Mm-hmm. So not only will they inspect the vehicle to make sure that it's in certain conditions, so they'll eliminate things like, let's say there's frame damage to the car. If the car is frame damaged, it doesn't qualify for certification. So it's eliminated. Most dealerships won't even take that car. They'll send that car out, and that's where you'll see the vehicles on these other side lots, right? And they're selling those vehicles. So there's really no recourse when it comes to something happening to the car. Not to mention the fact that once that car goes through the certification, a lot of manufacturers will put new car interest rates on those cars. So typically, pre-owned cars or used cars will have a higher interest rate than a new car. But if it's certified, you get a better interest rate. So like right now, like let's say you have 1.99%, you can't get 1.99% on a used car, you know, anywhere else. You know what I mean? If the vehicle's certified, that's the way to do it. Me personally, the vehicles, as you guys have all heard this, people say, oh, well, the vehicle loses value as soon as you drive it off the lot. Now, what happens is really, it's once it's registered, the vehicle loses value. That's when the vehicle loses value. And that's normally when you drive it off the lot.
That's when you got it brand new.
So yeah, when you're buying the car brand new, it initially loses its value when you drive it off the lot or the vehicle is titled.
Okay.
So now you're buying a vehicle that's gonna depreciate in value. That's what a car does. It's gonna go down in value. So you're financing a car that's losing value. It already took a big hit, right? When you're buying it new, opposed to a certified pre-owned, that the initial depreciation has already happened. Mm. It's already taken place. But you knew that car was taken care of. The manufacturer, the dealership, you know, is putting themselves behind that vehicle saying, hey, we know this vehicle. We've inspected this vehicle. We know this vehicle's in good shape. We're willing to even put a new car rate on it. So you have some more confidence when buying that type of vehicle.
Okay. All right. There was another thing that we saw when we were reading. It was gap insurance. Now, that's something that doesn't come on a finance, but it does come on a lease.
Yeah. New York State leases all have gap insurance. Now, what happens, people don't realize that if a vehicle is let's say, total or stolen, any negative equity. So if your insurance company says, hey, your car was worth $10,000, but you owe the bank $12,000 or $13,000, without gap insurance, you're responsible for that negative equity. Okay, so if a negative balance, you're responsible for that amount. So that's why all New York State leases will have gap insurance.
All right, so for people that go into the dealership and they don't really know like what questions, it's a little intimidating because you don't really know if you're getting ripped off or not.
You just call me.
So like what questions should they ask? Like how do you know if you're getting a good deal? How can you get the best deal? Everything's negotiable.
Yeah, everything's negotiable.
So how can you get the best deal?
So here's what it is. I mean, it's... The car business has this bad reputation, right? So sometimes we make it harder than it has to be as a consumer. Now, if you know there's a vehicle you want, there's so much information out there. You can go online, you can do research, you can find out what the cost of the vehicle is. But at the end of the day, I always recommend trying to buy local. Try to buy where you're going to be servicing your vehicle. And they want to take care of you. When you have a problem, yes, you can go to any manufacturer, you can go to any dealership and try to get help or have your vehicle serviced. But a lot of times when you buy local, they have more of an interest in taking care of you because you know what? You purchase from them, they're going to take care of you first, right? If you came to my dealership and you bought the car in Jersey, right? Or in another dealership, but another customer came in and he bought his car here, who would you expect me to take care of, right? Better or first, right? If I have one loan of car left, I'm going to give it to the guy who's loyal to me. He says he's buying cars for me. As far as the price goes, listen, there's a lot of information online. You can go, you can look up what the cost of the vehicles are. I do recommend, listen, you want to shop around. But at the end of the day, once you have a bottom line number, go into your local dealership, say, hey, this is what I got. Can you guys match it, get close to it, beat it, whatever it is.
What sites do you recommend? Like Kelley Blue Book?
Kelley Blue Book's great. You know, there's a lot of information. If you go to Google, you can search, you know, car gurus. They'll give you all types of information.
What's the residual value?
All right. Residual value is what the bank sets what's called a residual value. A residual value is the estimated value of the vehicle at the end of the lease. Okay, so that's what the bank is assuming or hoping that the vehicle is going to be worth once your lease is over. Now, that's determined by the mileage, right? How many miles, the less miles you put on a car, the higher your residual value is going to be. The good thing about the residual is that you want to have a high residual value. The higher the residual value means that the vehicle is going to depreciate less. So you're paying a smaller monthly payment because your monthly payment is based on the depreciation. Okay, so that's to give you mathematics, right?
Okay.
If the car has a selling price of, let's say, $50,000, right? Let's say it's an MSRP of $50,000, just to use round numbers. And the residual value is 50%. So it's $25,000 is what the vehicle is going to be estimated to be worth at the end of the lease, right? So you're going to pay that difference between the $50,000 and the $25,000. That's depreciation. But let's just say you just negotiated your price down to $45,000. So now you're shrinking the depreciation because it's between $45,000 and $25,000. Opposed to the 45 and 50. Mm-hmm. So you're paying on that depreciation. See what I mean?
Okay. And what about the cap reduction?
All right, cap cost reduction, that's the money down. Right? That's what your initial investment to bring your payments down. So you'll see a lot of times people come in, they say, well, I saw an ad that said $349 a month, but in that fine print, it said $3299 cap cost reduction or money down. So a lot of times people come in, they say, well, I don't want to put any money down. That means you're still giving your taxes, your first month's payment, your bank fee, your plates up front. It's not mean, doesn't mean you're not coming up with anything out of pocket. That just means you're not putting on a cap cost reduction. So to give you an idea, let's say on a 36-month lease, a $1,000 cap cost reduction is equivalent to roughly $30 in your monthly payment. So if you're at you know, let's say $450 a month and you want to get down to $420, you put an extra $1,000 down to get you down to that monthly payment after you've negotiated your best deal. Now, some people are opposed to putting money down. It's all a personal preference. Some people, let's say they know they want this particular car and maybe their company gives them an allowance for their vehicle, or they just want to keep the payment below a certain budget because they want to, you know, work the numbers in there for their monthly payments, right? They may put that money down. Me personally, I don't put money down on the lease because I'm okay with my monthly payment and I'd rather have the money in my pocket. That's the way I look.
Yeah, and sometimes the dealerships have things built in, right? Specials like that?
There are specials where they have incentives from the manufacturer if they're trying to move particular products. You know, some people come in and they say, well, wait a minute. Why is this car $55,000 and this car is $55,000? Let's say two different models, right? One may be an SUV and one's a sedan. The prices are different, mm-hmm. right? And what happens is we may have a lot more sedans in inventory. And there's not a lot of these SUVs around. Everybody's buying SUVs. So the manufacturer says, hey, let's help the dealership move these vehicles by putting additional incentives on it. So their payment will be lower.
Is there a specific time of year that happens? Like I always see like it's like a summer sale or winter, you know, like that.
Every manufacturer has different sales events. Like let's just say for Mercedes, normally end of year is a big time. Also in June or July, you'll see some nice sales events. But the way I look at it, it's all based on what you need. Right? Depending on when you need your car is when you want to work your best deal. Do the payments fluctuate to a point where it's hundreds of dollars difference between those sales events? Not necessarily. No, normally it's a $30, $40, $50 difference in the monthly payment. So if you need a car, listen, you want to go into the dealership, you want to build a good relationship with your dealership. And if you spend some time, work the deal, obviously make sure that you're there for a reason. A lot of times people come in and they go, you know what? Just give me your best price. I'm leaving. That makes it a little bit more difficult. And I get it. I get it. People get focused as far as the numbers go. I totally understand it. You want, but my thing is this: we want to give people great deals. We want you to buy cars, right? It's not about the car business has this, you know, persona of being like, oh, they're going to rip me off. That's not the case anymore. Listen, I'm sure there are people out there who take advantage of people, but that's not the case in most highline dealerships or most, you know, mom and pop, you know, organizations where they really look to take care of people.
And then you could buy a car at the end of the lease, right? If you want.
Now you can buy your vehicle out at the end of the lease. That's one thing people ask me a lot. Look, I want to lease this car and I want to buy it.
That was a big pun, right? Rent out lease with the option to buy.
No. So my thing is this: if you're going to buy the car now. All right. Now here's the thing: we go back to that residual value.
Yeah.
You want that residual value to be high. You almost want it to be unrealistically high because that means your monthly payment on your lease is going to be lower. Now, here's the thing. Now, at the end of the lease, all of a sudden you say, well, I'm going to buy it. You're buying it at that very high residual value. You have the option to buy it at that price. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now you're basically any savings that you took advantage of because that residual value is high, you're basically giving it right back to the bank.
And that's another thing, too, as far as with leasing a car, the monthly payments are usually lower than if you buy that car.
Normally a lot lower.
That's another thing people have to understand, too. It's like it's okay not to own everything. For me personally, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily want to own a car because I'm going to lose money on it.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I don't want to own something that I'm going to lose value in. So that's like owning a house that you know is going to go down in value.
Sure.
Like, mm-hmm. What's the point of owning it? Exactly. I'd rather rent it.
Yep.
I have to have somewhere to live. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to own a house where I know if I'm going to pay $100,000 and then 10 years it's going to be worth $20,000.
Well, that's what I tell people. If let's say there's an area that you want to live in for whatever reason, the views or whatever it is, the schools, whatever the case may be, you want to live there. But let's say the real estate agent said, hey, great news. This house is X amount. This apartment is X amount of dollars. And every year it's going to go down in value. You're going to say, well, wait a minute. Why would I buy that? Right. For that, you're better off renting it. Yeah. Right. You say, yeah. Listen, I want to live here for 3 years. But guess what? In 3 years from now, I want to go move to the suburbs. You know, I like the views where I am, but I can't see myself raising a family here. Right. You'd rather rent that apartment. And renting is like that case. Like it's like leasing, where you have the option to walk away from it at the end of those 3 years.
Yeah, there's something called a lease end clause. That's like something that's like a hidden clause that I actually found out about. So like if I have a Mercedes and I lease it, but at the end of the lease, I decide, you know what, I want to go to BMW. There's a price for that?
So they have what's called a disposition fee, all right? It's basically a fee to turn in the vehicle. Now, here's the thing. If you go with another BMW, a lot of times they'll just waive that fee,
right?
Now, there is a reason why they charge it. It's not just a penalty for leaving the brand. They have to keep in mind that once you surrender that vehicle, they have to pick up that vehicle. They have to condition it for resale. So things like that they go through. There's paperwork that has to be processed in order to do it. And obviously, it does give you some sort of incentive to stay with the brand.
Right. So if I stayed and there's that cost, obviously,
yeah, they waive that for you. Yeah. Most manufacturers waive that.
I learned that. I didn't know that. I learned that when I was trading my car.
Yeah, that's why you have to stay with Mercedes.
We're trying, man. We are trying.
I got you.
All right. But before we go, I have one other question that I just saw recently online where somebody said that they they sold their car back to a dealership after they leased it. How does that work? Is it okay with that?
So very rarely does it happen where the vehicle has a higher value than the residual value. Okay, so let's say the residual value, like we talked about, was $25,000. The guy kept it in great shape. He hardly drove it. He only put minimal mileage on the vehicle. The car's garage kept. And all of a sudden, for some reason, there's a high demand for that particular vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say this $30,000 is actually the book value for that car. And he owes 25, he can turn around to the dealership and say, hey, I know my buyout is X amount of dollars. Would you be willing to buy that car from me in order for me to trade it back to you? Now, they have some money that they could put towards another vehicle also.
Yeah. T-Pain said that.
No, yeah. it was Matthew Knowles.
Oh, and that post, but T-Pain bought the Bugatti for $1.2 million.
He didn't. Yeah, he lost $400,000.
Yeah, he lost $400,000. He blew the engine or something like that and sold it back to the dealership for $800,000. He lost $400,000 on the deal.
Well, he brought the car and then sold it 6 months later.
Yeah.
Yeah, he lost $400,000.
I mean, it's rare that happens. You know, like I said, cars are depreciating assets, but it's very rare that'll happen.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.